This message comes from NPR sponsor Acorn TV. Acorn TV is brilliant television told brilliantly. From charmingly cozy mysteries to daringly dark dramas, visit acorn.tv for a 30-day free trial with promo code NPR. Acorn TV. Brilliant.
With HBO's The Gilded Age, Downton Abbey creator Julian Fellowes basically airlifts Downton's soapy plots, its baubles and ball gowns, its sneering servants and quippy old ladies out of Yorkshire and plops them down in the Manhattan of 1882. The show's central conflict isn't that of upper versus lower classes exactly, but something more quintessentially American. Old money versus new money, with new money the odds-on favorite. The show is about to return for a second season, so we thought it was a perfect time to revisit our conversation about the series. I'm Glenn Weldon, and today in this encore episode of NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour, we're talking about The Gilded Age.
In this country, more than two local newspapers are closing down each week. As news deserts grow, public radio is a lifeline for staying informed. Keep that service strong with a donation to the NPR network at donate.npr.org. And thank you.
I'm Miles Parks. I cover voting and election security for NPR. Across the NPR network, we report rigorously on the forces seeking to disrupt democracy and provide communities with reliable information. It's Public Media Giving Days, the perfect time to stand with the facts by donating now at donate.npr.org. Thank you.
Over the past couple decades, the U.S. has lost about a third of its newspapers, taking thousands of local journalists off their beats. A functioning democracy and functioning local journalism go hand in hand. We're trying to do our part, and that's why we need you to do your part. Make sure that the NPR network stays strong by supporting us at donate.npr.org. And thank you.
Is it possible to engineer our way out of the climate crisis? Some entrepreneurs want to shoot particles into the stratosphere to combat global warming. Experts say regulations on this technology aren't keeping up. The world of solar geoengineering on the latest episode of The Sunday Story from NPR's Up First podcast.
Joining me today is Christina Tucker of the podcast Wait, Is This a Date? From Autostraddle. Hey, Christina.
Hello, Glenn.
Welcome, welcome. And also with us is Greta Johnson, host of the beloved Nerdette podcast from WBEZ. Welcome, Greta.
Hey, Glenn.
Okay, let's get to it. This is going to be fun. In The Gilded Age, young Marion Brooke, played by Louisa Jacobson, is left with nothing when her father dies. She moves to New York City to live with her two aunts, or I should probably say aunts, the stern Agnes and the warm-hearted Ada, played by Christine Baranski and Cynthia Nixon, respectively. Agnes is very clear. Their family is old money, and Marion is to have nothing to do with those grasping new money upstarts who just moved in across the street. George and Bertha Russell, played by Morgan Spector and Carrie Coon, are said upstarts. Bertha will do anything to become a fixture of old money society, and George is a ruthless but charming railroad robber baron. And speaking of railroads, British creator Julian Fellowes is only too happy to touch the third rail of American life by including a person of color as a major character. That's got to be a first for this guy. Peggy, played by Danae Benton, is a young black writer who works as Agnes's secretary while hoping to publish her work and distance herself from her disapproving family. Toss in a gay subplot, a couple dozen other characters to keep track of, including servants and other members of society, and a cast that includes a lot of beloved theater actors in teeny tiny roles, and you got yourself The Gilded Age. Christina, what'd you think?
I, every week, watch this show, and I have a fine time. I chuckle every time Christine Baranski says some sort of witty, cutting remark. I have a great time looking at all of these theater actors in these teeny tiny roles. The first episode I watched with my housemate, and I kept being like, Tony, that person has a Tony. That person's been nominated for a Tony. And I think she thought I was kidding after a while.
Yeah.
And do I think about this show like the second it ends? Not really, but I still have a great time watching my harrowing friends work through their money issues, I guess, with one another. Like, I don't know what the show is doing, but I'm just happy to watch it. I'm happy to watch Carrie Coon do anything. If she wants to read me the phone book, I'm happy to be here for it.
Yep.
So I'm having fun, but I don't really know why.
Greta, what's your take?
I agree with Christina on a lot of fronts. Like, this show is very nice to look at, right? Like, the costumes, the setting, the people, it's all very lovely. I definitely think the most interesting aspect of this show, which you referred to as you were describing it, Glenn, is the portrayal of like working class and affluent Black life in New York in that time period. Mm-hmm. We don't see that very often. And I think it's really like interesting and important. I wish there were more of it. It feels a bit wedged in to me. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, I don't know. Like, yes, it's a good hang. I think initially when I thought about like Downton Abbey on HBO, which more or less is kind of like how you would pitch this show, right? I was thinking like Downton Abbey, but salacious, some cursing, more sex, like, you know, the HBO treatment. But really, it's Downton Abbey with an HBO visual effects budget, which is fine. Yeah. To your point, Christina, this is not one of those shows where I watch it and then the next day I'm like, ooh, I wonder what's going on. You know, like it hasn't planted seeds in my brain in that really satisfying way that like a really good story does, you know?
Uh-huh. I hear you. You mentioned satisfying. That's my first and only note. You know what feels good? Having my expectations so thoroughly and perfectly and overwhelmingly met. It feels good. Mm-hmm. Good, not great, right? Not surprising.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Not intriguing. Not exciting. Just good.
Sure.
You got to say the show delivers on its promise, and it does so with such absolute precision. It does nothing else, but it is not interested in doing anything else.
It's not.
I don't want it to. I don't need it to. I think Julian Fellowes probably thinks he's doing something new. He probably thinks this old versus new money is a radical departure for him. It is not. He thinks throwing in the character of Peggy allows him to explore the issue of race in America. And who better, really, than British Lord, Peer of the Realm. I looked this up. Deputy Lieutenant of the County of Dorset, Alexander Kitchener Fellows, Baron Fellows of West Stafford.
Yeah, I've been clamoring for his voice on American race relations. So
when will Baron Fellows chime in is what we've all been thinking. So this guy has a very narrow and rigid channel of storytelling that he works in, and he does it well. But every time he tries to introduce new elements, you get this moment of, oh, this will be interesting. This is new. But then he immediately sets about treating them like every other element he's ever worked with, and they just conform to this rigid kind of infrastructure. You get Carrie Coon, all right? Carrie Coon, best actor of this, our modern age, so good at interiority and nuance and conveying layers of meaning with a single expression, and you have her seethe and scream and throw her breakfast tray, and then in my favorite scene of the show so far, she stares into a roaring fireplace, shaking with rage as the score swells, and it's like, dude, you've got a Swiss Army knife and you're treating it like a hacksaw.
Yes.
And I know all this sounds like a complaint. It's not for me, right? He is working in a very specific genre. It's one he's not interested in subverting or tweaking or blending. Mm. And I am not asking him to do the thing that you do. His genre is very specific. It is, oh dear, there's rather a spot of bother with the pudding spoons. That's his vibe. That's the stakes. That's the genre. That's what I came here for. So I sit down, I watch it, and I'm like, shut up, slap a hat with a really disquieting amount of feathers on top of Christine Baranski, have her say something withering, and cut to the next scene. Let's go. That's the show.
And you know what? They do that. I will have to give them that. I do wonder how much of the problem is perhaps Louisa Jacobson, Gummer 3, as I refer to her, because do not let her fool you. She is, in fact, a Streep daughter. I don't understand any of her motivations. I just can't quite get a grasp on what she's doing. She's giving me Senior Showcase energy, and I just need like a little bit more, especially if you're going to be in scenes with people like Christine Baranski. Right.
Have you made any plans yet?
She's only just arrived, Agnes.
I haven't made any plans, no.
I suppose you only recently learned that your father had let you down.
Please don't speak ill of Daddy.
I will say what I like in my own house.
Not to me.
I just need like a touch more from her. And I wonder if because so much of the motivating premise of the show is set on her, this action of her moving is like, maybe that's why there's a little bit of, I don't know.
Well, I mean, I think especially in the pilot, but kind of still after having seen episode 5, like I feel like all of these characters are pretty one-dimensional, you know? Mm-hmm. To your point, like this young niece, she's like, oh, my aunts are so dowdy. I just want to do stuff, you know? And then like there's, as you point out, Christine Baranski being like, oh, well, we don't speak to them. Mm-hmm. Every line, they pretty much just reiterate this over and over. My thought after watching the pilot was like, oh, y'all spent more money on lobster than you did on script writing. Mm-hmm. And like, okay, like the lobster looked great, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think the one-dimensional nature kind of speaks to Fellows' politics and how it kind of slyly infiltrates the show. This dude is a conservative member of parliament in the House of Lords. But because this dude is writing about characters in the past, and he knows he's writing for a modern audience, he can have a character like Maggie Smith's Dowager Countess or Christine Baranski's Agnes act all stern and regressive and old ways must be preserved, but then give them like a line of dialogue or one action or one opinion that to us present day audiences, we recognize as progressive or at least common sense. And then we think that's a layer, right? We think, oh, she's not so bad. She's got layers. Does it matter to him that there is no universe in which the Dowager Countess would say or act that way or Christine Baranski's character would ever hold that opinion? Nope. It's kind of a shell game. It's a little disingenuous.
Yeah. I find those relationships so fascinating. Like all of these like smaller things about Black characters that we don't get to see, as Greta was saying, in this time period that often. But I can't help but wonder just like, why are they here in this show? Is this the person to say this? And like, if so, why wasn't it just, you know, centered on this family? That could have been perhaps more interesting.
Yeah, especially the newspaper drama. Like, I am here for that.
I'm here for the news. I'm here for print.
It was really interesting reading up on this show because it's like staffing wise, it seemed like they, you know, there is a really incredible Black historical consultant who initially was just going to be a consultant, but now has a producer role. You know, there are some very prominent people working on this show to help create accuracy around Black life in New York, which is amazing. But then it's sort of like, do we need the other stuff? And it feels to me like that wasn't a priority initially either. It feels to me like it was sort of retroactively fit in.
Yeah.
And I'm glad it exists, but I wish there were more of it. I wish it felt a little more like solidly executed or something. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I think it feels like, you know, for me as a Black woman watching it, it doesn't have that kind of like ring of falseness that sometimes when like Black characters are added to stories that are primarily white can have. And it does feel like there is like all of this Black talent and Black creation behind it. But it still is just like, but why is it like this, I don't know, 1/16th of this part of the show? Where's the show that's just this?
I wonder how much they're going to realize that that is what people are tuning in for. And if that's even going to be able to be a priority given Julian Fellowes and the fact that this is still his show, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, this is the thing. As you both mentioned, this is the part of the show that we haven't seen before, the storytelling around these people. Everything else we've seen almost exactly before. And I mentioned expectations, right? This is what Fellowes' whole narrative storytelling shtick is. I recommend a McSweeney's piece that was called Every Episode of Television Show, written by Julian Fellowes by Shannon Reed. It is brilliant. But like what he does, right, is he sets up very precise series of expectations in his audience. And then he knowingly frustrates them for a little time, a little bit. And then he delivers unto his audience exactly what he made them want. Nothing is permitted to exist outside of those parameters. Nothing in a show happens for its own sake. If two characters exchange a glance, it's not to let the actor do anything weird or put some interior life in their character or just to be there for its own sake. It's not to characterize character. It is there as a setup. Every look exchange between characters is a setup, a klaxon to let us know that something's coming. And because we know how Fellowes works, we know exactly what is coming. And then when it happens, we feel smart. We feel satisfied when it happens. And sure, at some point in every episode of every television episode he's ever written, some character is going to say some version of, the world is changing. And here's why I don't mind that. They're not wrong. World's always changing, right?
Huge if true.
Let him say it. Do what you do.
And you know what? He is doing what he does. And I do think it's a little interesting that he seems to, as opposed to in Downton, where like I felt like the folks who were working for these families had a lot richer and fuller lives. I don't know that he has such a handle on the primarily the two households that we see now. I just feel like there's so many characters in who make up like maids and cooks and servants. And I'm like, I get it. You have a French chef, but like what else is going on here? Like with all of these people, maybe the cast is just too big. I don't know what it could just be that.
I agree. A great example, I think, is from this most recent episode. It might've been from 4, where that maid is given the pie and goes to visit her mother. And it's kind of the first time you see like less affluent life in this world. It's not a pleasant time for this maid. And then she goes back to work and pretends like she has a great time. And it's like, why am I supposed to care about this?
Right. And like, what's Michael Severus doing? He's going on walks.
Christina, this bugs me. Why do you have this actor doing this, exchanging looks and going on walks when something's coming? And I imagine I have a good idea, although they already have done the gay subplot, so it's not that. Right. Anyway.
I did see a tweet that I related to very intensely about this show. Mm-hmm. And it's from Matt Collette, who's a podcast producer. And he said, if season one of The Gilded Age doesn't end with Carrie Coon burning down Christine Baranski's mansion, what are we even doing here?
Yeah, I would pay cold hard cash to see that.
Right? Yeah.
Totally,
so,
totally.
I don't know.
And like, okay, so that scene where the butler goes over to the other house and sees how the other butler does it. You think, all right, here we go. What's going to happen here? Nothing happens. They just double down on the theme of the show, which is new money versus old money. And it's like, okay, this was a moment. This was a thing. Still watching.
Yeah.
Again, like every week I sign up and I say, I'm ready to sit down and watch this. Like I'm ready to sit down and watch Christine Baranski's gay son be like petty at somebody for a reason that I might not really understand, but I'm here. I'm happy to watch it. Like that's fine. Of course, Christine Baranski has a gay son. You can't have that kind of mom and not have a gay son. Come on now.
Just the law of averages. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly, Glenn. It's the law of gay average.
Something I've been thinking about, I think I might actually switch to binging the show. Like I think I'm going to wait till the rest of the episodes come out and watch them in a like on a Sunday afternoon or something, because by episode 5 I'm a little more satisfied with the fact that like there is some plot happening. But I do wonder if having a bunch of them to watch in a row and just spending a lovely afternoon is a better way to consume this show than in these like weekly slices.
Yeah, that's a perennial question, Greta, because like critics got all 5 episodes at once, we binged them. And so to us, the show exists in I think a different headspace than it does for people who are watching it one week at a time.
Yeah. Well, and I watched them 1 week at a time until the last 2 episodes. I watched those, you know, I had screeners for those.
Yep.
But I pretty much did do them 1 week at a time initially for the first 3. And by the end of the 3rd one, I was like, I think I might need to like save these up and see if it's more satisfying that way.
I do think it would be a very satisfying binge. Sit down, have an afternoon in, you know, the Van Ryn household.
Yeah,
you know?
Make some trifle.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. When you've got like, I don't know, wafer cookies that do not have a lot of substance, you can't just have just one at a time. You need to feel satisfied.
Exactly.
You need them all at once. Exactly. Something this thin. And pretty and delicious.
Yeah.
You just need a handful.
It's more than the recommended serving size.
Can't be clear enough about how much I'm going to watch every episode I am given of this show. Season 2, bring it on. If you want to do season 3, let's go. I'm going to watch it and I will be happy to be there, probably.
All right, well, tell us what you think about The Gilded Age. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. Greta Johnson, Christina Tucker, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. This was very fun.
This episode was produced by Mike Katzeff and edited by Jessica Reedy, and Hello Come In provides our theme music. Thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. I'm Glenn Weldon, and we'll see you all tomorrow.
Listen to Embedded for moments that stay with you.
I could smell the smoke. I could smell the dust.
Voices that resonate. Stories that change the way you think about your life.
How did we get here?
The Embedded podcast is NPR's home for original documentary series. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Humans are kind of overrated. Over on Shortwave, a science podcast, we're only kind of kidding. We're bringing you the wondrous world of animal science to your daily life. From queer animal love stories to songbird memories, we're showing you how critter knowledge informs human science. Listen now to Shortwave, a podcast from NPR.
On It's Been a Minute, we're keeping you in the know when it comes to culture. I break down the latest trends and the forces behind them and introduce you to the creatives who think deeply about how we live today. Come for some good old cultural analysis and have a few laughs with me. Listen to the It's Been a Minute podcast from NPR.